What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of In the Heyday. I am your host, Oliver Hayes, and I'm super excited to be back on the pod as quickly as I am because it is time to look at the Big 12 tournament. Now that the bracket is set, 16 teams will travel to Kansas City to play in the T-Mobile Center from Tuesday to Saturday, and a Big 12 tournament champion will be crowned on Saturday evening, punching their ticket to March Madness. The likely winner of this tournament will likely already be in the dance, given the resumes of the top five teams. The Big 12 conference will likely have five or six. Will have at least five, likely six, bids for this year's dance. When you look at Arizona, the Big 12 regular season conference champions, they hold the one seed. Will obviously be going to the dance. Then number two seeded Houston, number three seeded Kansas, number four seeded Texas Tech, and number five seeded Iowa State. All those teams have put together great resumes, have all been ranked throughout the season, and are undeniably March Madness teams. So regardless of how they do in this tournament, they are all expected to be dancing just over 2 weeks. I don't know exactly when March Madness starts, but they'll be dancing pretty soon. Outside of that, you then got to look at number six seeded TCU, number seven seeded West Virginia, and number eight seeded UCF as the three teams who are most likely to pick up that sixth spot from the Big 12 to make March Madness. UCF has, in my opinion, has put together the best set of wins resume-wise, even though they only hold the eight seed. But all those teams are neck and neck, can all make some noise, especially if they pick up some upsets here in this tournament. All that to say that the Big 12 tournament is arguably the best conference tournament in the nation this year, especially when you look at all the different talent, specifically at the freshman level. I mean, you have Darren Peterson, AJ DeBonta, Kingston Flemings, Isaiah Johnson for the Buffaloes, who just broke the CU freshman season scoring record. You look at Baylor, who has Tunde Yusufu. You look at Iowa State, and they have some talented freshmen. Arizona obviously has a bunch of talented freshmen that were on display at the CU Event Center as Brandon Berries and Kobe P combined for 56 points the other night. There are a bunch of very talented players and young players at that in this conference tournament beyond just the overall team talent that will be offered across this next week, and that has been offered across the last few months as this basketball season has unfolded. But either way, even though I'm looking at the full tournament, I will be looking at the Buffaloes, who sit as the number 11 seed. They are set to take on number 14 seed at Oklahoma State at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time on ESPN Plus on Tuesday night. And looking at the Buffaloes, I'll see, with breaking down the tournament, I'll explain how far I think each team will go. I'll put my guesses. I'll be putting my bracket. We all know how brackets work. But I will kind of go in depth a little bit more with Colorado and talk about how they could potentially find a way to the Big 12 championship in an impossible fashion, winning five games in 5 days to get their only chance. It would be an automatic bid to make March Madness if they won the Big 12 tournament championship. But that's their only chance to make March Madness, given the resume that they've put together this season, which will likely put them in either the NIT or the college basketball crown, being from such a talented conference. But all that to say, I'll focus on the Buffs, more so than any other team. Obviously, that's a given. But we'll go from top to bottom, before I focus on CU. Looking at this first matchup of the day, Baylor versus ASU. I actually am fairly high on ASU due to their front court. I really like Masawa Njizope. He's another talented freshman. I just really like his game and think that he could be a great player in the college game across, in the nation scheme, because he's already making noise as an athletic 7-footer here in the Big 12. But I like him. Mo Odom is obviously very fun to watch. Pig Johnson can do some stuff off the bench for the Sun Devils. But Baylor, as they showed against Colorado, they have a bunch of talent, not necessarily that demanding of a front court, which is part of the reason why they have struggled this season. They are one of two teams going along with UCF that can that completely redid their team. There's nobody from last year's team that is on Baylor. It's part of the reason why they've struggled with things. They've dealt with some injury issues. So if I had to pick, given those two resumes, I think that I would have to go Arizona State for this one, just because, I mean, this is gonna be interesting drawing with the software I'm using. But ASU with the pick in that first round over Baylor, just because of Musoma Jizobe, Allen McCabe, he hasn't had the greatest season that I w and with what I expected after what he showed in the Big 12 opener against Colorado. But he is something of a force, and as I mentioned, Mo Odom and some other guys can get things going. And I think even though Baylor is talented, from Obi Agbim, a Colorado native, to Cameron Carr, to Tunde Yusufa, who I named earlier, I just think that'll be too hard for Baylor to it'll be too hard. It's too hard for me to rely on a team that is so streaky and inconsistent. So I think Arizona State, with the front court reliability, and likely going to take over the rebounding, and be able to deter those talented scorers I just named from the paint. I think the ASU will beat Baylor in that first game on Tuesday and go on to take on the number 5 seed at Iowa State. Then looking at Utah versus Cincinnati, Utah has been, they're the last place team in the conference. I know the Buffs were last place last year and won two games, but Utah, they do not have a lot. Talk about the front court difference in the first game. It's even more in the second game when you look at why can't I remember his name now? I can't remember his first name, but Tiam, Musafa Tiam, I think that's his name. The big man for Cincinnati, who was at UCF last year. He's a fantastic front court player for Cincinnati. He's had a good year. Obviously, Baba Miller, the four for the Bearcats, has been pretty solid this year as well. And even though the backcourt of Jizzle James and Day Day Thomas and guys like that hasn't been maybe as productive as the Bearcats would have wanted this season, going against the last place Utes, who the Buffs beat really handily, I think Cincinnati will have that. Terrence Brown and Don McHenry are talented players, but the front court for Utah has been very unproductive this season. So I will go with Cincinnati. Oh, that's not a C. Can I? Okay. This will be an interesting drawing session, bro. UC versus number 8 seeded UCF, out of that game. But then Kansas State versus BYU. Kansas State has PJ Haggerty. Not much else. So BYU, even though they are without Richie Saunders, I believe AJ DeBonta, Rob Wright, and company can get the job done. Keep Ikeda's the best is the best front court player in that matchup. So BYU stands out for me. Unless for some reason they just miss a bunch of threes. And then looking at Colorado versus Oklahoma State, the one that we've been waiting for, I think Colorado will take this one. The Buffs won the lone matchup between these teams at the CU Event Center at home. They of course will be on a neutral site, and not at home, so they won't have the altitude advantage and things like that. Won't have their own court advantage, but that game happened recently. The Buffs had control. They were able to put a lock on Anthony Roy, the leading scorer for the Cowboys on the season, and were able to handle some of the other guards, as Oklahoma State had a really tough day from the field against the Buffaloes in Boulder. But since then, Parsifal, the star big man for the Cowboys, he went down with a knee injury, a season-ending knee injury, since playing the Buffaloes. So the Cowboys will be shorthanded against CU. Which will obviously be a big factor come Tuesday, in a game where they'll already be the underdogs against the Buffaloes. And even though Colorado may be shorthanded without Sebastian Rancic, who has missed the last two contests due to injury, it is unknown whether or not he is going to be ready to go on Tuesday. Even though the Buffaloes will be shorthanded, obviously have built some momentum with some with 3-2 record over the last five games of the regular season. They played quite well against Arizona on Saturday, even without Rancic. They beat Utah without Rancic. So even though they are going to be shorthanded as well, I believe that that the Buffs can do something similar to what they did to the Cowboys just a few games ago, being a part of that 5-game stretch that I just mentioned to round out the regular season. And I think CU, unless Anthony Roy and the Cowboys can really get that 3-point shot going, specifically, and score the ball at will, I think the Buffs can take that one pretty easily, given the front court advantage that they'll have. Bengt Dak is playing some great basketball, even though he dealt with foul trouble against Arizona. And I just think the Buffs will have a much better time against Oklahoma State, and will likely make their way to the second round of the Big 12 tournament, set to play number 6 seeded TCU, who they beat in the lone matchup of that between those two schools in the regular season. So now in the second round, I'll go from bottom to top, starting with TCU versus CU. Number 11 seed versus number 6 seed, as I just mentioned, Colorado took the lone matchup between those two teams in the regular season. I do think that's created a little bit of some unrealistic expectations. I think some people believe that Colorado is far better than TCU. But the Horned Frogs are number 6 for a reason, even standing above West Virginia and UCF and Cincinnati, teams that looked much better against Colorado than TCU did. And even though the Horned Frogs, their front court doesn't necessarily pop out, their back court doesn't necessarily pop out in a scoring sense, more in a playmaking sense, more traditional wise with Brock Harding and Jane Pierre. Those guys are talented, but just not in the same way that some of the other scoring guards are across the Big 12. I think the unrealistic expectations are there with TCU, so I don't think this will be a walk in the park like some fans expect for the Buffs. And this could be a close contest, especially because TCU will make more shots than they did in that tough offensive outing that they had at the CU Event Center earlier this season. I don't really have a one reason to fall one way or the other. Beyond that matchup, that went to CU, if I were to have, if that matchup were to not exist, I'd probably say that number 6 seeded TCU would be the favorites in this one, regardless of seed. Just given the statistics and some of the wins that they've pulled off that CU hasn't this year, they have a little bit more of a the have shown a little bit more of a they have shown that they can beat some better teams than CU has beaten, I guess. Than me trying to come up with some way to describe that. But the Buffaloes, with the front court advantage that they showed in that matchup, as TCU is one of the smaller front courts that isn't in the bottom half of the Big 12, I think the Buffs should have an easier time than any of the other teams that are getting a single bye. When you look at West Virginia, UCF, and Iowa State, obviously Iowa State is the best of those two teams, but UCF has a solid front court with John Bull and Jamichael Stilwell. West Virginia, they're not necessarily the tallest team, but great defensively and can rebound the basketball. And TCU, kind of doing everything similarly to CU and personnel-wise matching up similarly, but slightly smaller in that front court. I think the Buffs will have the advantage, even though they're coming in 5 seeds less. And they can beat the Horned Frogs. I will take the Buffs over TCU, even though I just said that some people may have some unexpected unrealistic expectations for this game. But I think it's just because of that front court advantage. Unless Jane Pierre and the Horned Frogs can shoot a lot better, I just think the Buffaloes match up well personnel wise against David Punch, who's a talented player. They can limit Brock Harding. And some of those, and Jane Pierre, especially if Harding isn't able to move the ball as well as he wants to, which was the case in Boulder in the matchup between those two teams. But then looking at the next matchup as we move up the bracket is BYU versus number 7 seeded West Virginia. This one will be a toss up. As I mentioned, West Virginia doesn't have a great front court. They're not the tallest team, but they're fantastic on the defensive end. BYU, not great defensively, are fantastic offensively, with A.J. DeBonta and Rob Wright leading that charge. If I had to guess, I would have to pick BYU because I don't think the offensive talent is enough paired with West Virginia's defense. Honor Huff is obviously a talented player, but he's quite small. Trayson Eagelstaff is a guy who transferred from mid-major from North Dakota State. No, I think just North Dakota. I think it was. And has made an impact on a Big 12 team. A few different guys have made impacts for West Virginia and have made them the number 7 seed. They're a very sound team. Less room to fall off. But I think if BYU can see a solid performance from AJ Dabonsa, who's who take that team as far as they can go, I think I have to give the edge to BYU just because AJ is just such a great player. I think the offense is more convincing in that side, and BYU is more likely to outshoot, is more likely to hit shots against a tough defense than I think West Virginia will be able to make it a complete rock fight and perform slightly better on the defensive end. I think BYU is just a little bit more offensive talent than West Virginia is defensively talented in that case. But looking at UCF versus Cincinnati, dude, I'm so tired, bro. Like, I'm so sorry this is dragging on, but I mean, shout out, bro. I hope y'all are enjoying this. Cincinnati versus UCF. I talked about Cincinnati in their front court. They have a decent rotation, can go into the bench decently, but I really like UCF. I like the backcourt of Riley Kugel and Tymus Folks, and then I mentioned that they paired along with John Bull and Jermichael Stilwell, and a few other players I'm forgetting the name of, but number 99 for UCF. I can't remember his name. He's been playing good ball this year, and I think UCF is just a more sound team than Cincinnati. Although this should be a tough matchup, of course, 8 and a 9 seed matched up, just a 1 seed difference. But UCF, I just think with the backcourt advantage that they'll have, they should have an easier time. They know Tiam's game after having him last year, and still having Johnny Dawkins as the head coach. You know how he can play, and John Bull and Jermichael Stilwell, as I mentioned, have been solid throughout the year. So I think they can compete and will have the slight edge with the better backcourt players. So I'll give Cincinnati to move on to play number 1 seeded Arizona in that quarterfinal round. And then looking at Arizona State versus Iowa State, Arizona State has come up with some very unlikely wins, including a win over this Iowa State team. However, Iowa State, I don't think, will be twice. TJ Otzelberger is a great coach. The defensive scheme that the Cyclones are able to employ with their depth is very hard to beat, and I don't think Arizona State can do it twice. So I will go with ISU to then take on number 4 seeded Texas Tech. Now, going back from top to bottom, Iowa State versus Texas Tech. This one is really making me think, dude. This one's really, really making me think. I think I would have to go Iowa State. No, I'm gonna go TTU. I'm gonna go Texas Tech because even though they are without JT Toppin, they will be playing their first game of the tournament, while Iowa State will be playing their second game in 2 days, which they'll be ready for, but it'll be a tough game that they'll have to play against Arizona State, even though I expect them to win. It'll be tough for them to take on the Texas Tech team, even though they are without JT Toppin, even though I just praised TJ Otzelberger for the defensive scheme that they have, with how they blitz players in the post and off of screens and things like that. They switch. Texas Tech has the shooting and the ball handling with Christian Anderson to have the offense to beat Iowa State. So I'll go with Texas Tech, and ride with them to make it to the semifinal. Arizona versus Cincinnati, I don't really need to talk about much. U of A is gonna be the team that I'm guessing will that is not an A that will win that game between Arizona and Cincinnati. I have a bunch of praise for U of A, just for their top eight, the front court specifically. But I mean, you look at the backcourt and Jane Bradley's and Brayden Barry's, and It's just, I mean, hard to believe that the Bearcats can do something to the Wildcats on a neutral site, doing the same thing that Iowa State would have to do playing the same game in 2 days. Then looking at number two seed Houston versus BYU, I think this will be, I mean, this game will be kind of close. I think any team that has AJ Abanza can put up somewhat of can put up a decent fight. BYU has come up with some unlikely wins, even though even after Richie Saunders went down, even though they went on a very tough stretch down the middle of this Big 12 regular season. I don't think you would necessarily count them out versus Houston, but the Cougars, great defense. And have the height, not necessarily the height in JoJo Tugler, but height in Chris Anak, and obviously have a far more dominant front court than West Virginia. And because I named that, I thought that West Virginia's offense will be enough to compete with BYU, even if West Virginia has a good defensive outing. The fact that Houston has a number of guys in their backcourt, whether it's Kingston Fleming, Smiley Suzanne, Emmanuel Sharp. Then looking at the front court, I mean, JoJo Tugler and Chris Anak Jr. can score the ball. I gotta pick UH to go to that semifinals, and I feel bad picking all the favorites, but like, I mean, playing your first game while another team is playing their second in 2 days, or third in 3 days is just, I mean, kind of a no-brainer anyways. But I mean, they're the top seeds for a reason in such a big conference. You're gonna have wider seeds playing against each other. But then looking at CU versus Kansas, I mean, you got to go KU. It's hard to beat KU no matter what team you are in the Big 12. But at the same time, playing in Kansas City, this will be like a home game for the Jayhawks. And I don't think that the Buffs can overcome that, especially if Sebastian Rancic is not healthy or coming back from injury. Obviously, he's played, the whole season, but it will be tough for him to try and come back against a Jayhawks team that is very sound. Of course, Darren Peterson makes the Jayhawks, in my mind, national title contenders. But the Jayhawks have beat Arizona, one of two teams to do that this season, along with Texas Tech. The Jayhawks, they have height across the board in that backcourt with Melvin Council Jr. and Trey White, so they can lock down Barrington Hargis and Isaiah Johnson, or at least attempt to. I know that Hargis and Johnson still had fine games against the Jayhawks in the first meeting, in the only meeting that the teams had but this season. But yeah, I just think Kansas has too much talent across the board and is too tall. Even though I think the Buffs could have a decent chance of fouling out Florey Badunga, not fouling out, but putting some pressure on Florey Badunga and making the Jayhawks have to rely on some other players. I just think, they're too tall, and with the Kansas City home court advantage, basically, that it'll be tough for CU to move on. So for the semifinal round, it will be Houston versus Kansas, Texas Tech versus U of A. Looking at Houston versus Kansas, I gotta go Kansas. I love Houston. I love Kelvin Sampson. I just love, like, I don't have a specific connection to Houston, but I just love what Kelvin Sampson is doing there down in Houston. Like, I like the, I really gravitate to old-timey approach and developing players and staying true to your program and things like that. Of course, it helps that Sampson is a legendary coach, but, yeah, I mean, just a very respectable guy, very respectable program, especially when you look at the transfer numbers that he mentioned at Big 12 Media Day at the beginning of the season. Like, only four transfers or something in the last 11 years or something like that, which is absolutely crazy in this day and age. But either way, I think Kansas, with the home court advantage and the reason I just named, will be too much for Houston, who has, in my mind, taken a step back in comparison to last year, even though Kingston Fleming's has provided a great spark for this team. Without Jerron Roberts, the front court, even though Chris Anak is great, without Jerron Roberts, front court isn't as solid, and I feel like the depth, the bench, with so many young guys for the Cougars, which is unlike them, it will be tougher for them to compete with the Jayhawks on that in that you know in the, that that home court environment. I mean, that would be the big thing. Then looking at Texas Tech versus Arizona, Arizona has the front court advantage. They will have in pretty much every game this season. I'm not sure if there's another team across the nation that can match up with them in the front court as they look to pound the ball inside. and can do so pretty much against anyone. With the Red Raiders not having JT Topp and only having Luke Bamboye, or Bam Boy, I'm always butcher his name. I'm sorry about that, but only having one big, I think it will be very, it won't be possible for the Red Raiders to come up with a win. Even though they've come up with some wins without Topp, and of course Christian Anderson, as talented like I mentioned just a second ago, he can get the guys going and score the ball himself. The Red Raiders can shoot the ball. Lawan Watts, obviously a great player, but Arizona just too demanding, too deep. They have enough height, and I believe it will be them in Kansas in a very fun Big 12 championship on Saturday evening. And I mean, yeah, this one will go either way. Obviously, Kansas took the meeting at Allen Fieldhouse. It will be slightly different, a slightly different environment in T-Mobile Center than there if this ends up being the Big 12 championship matchup. But U of A, even though the fans frustrate me and all the things. They're just undeniable. They're undeniable. I mean, they're just, yeah, their rotation, they're deep, they're tall, they're talented, they can score. I mean, they can do a number of things. So I think that they will be too much for Kansas. Obviously, Floribadunga is a force in that front court for the Jayhawks, but whenever he gets into foul trouble, which he may with how much Pete and Mody Jaskrevicius and Toby Awaka and etc., as much as they pound the ball inside for the Wildcats, it could be likely that Floribadunga finds himself into foul trouble, which then would put the Jayhawks in a very tough spot. So unless Darren Peterson can get things going, even though the Wildcats lost to the Jayhawks without Peterson, unless he can get going, I think it'll be hard for the Jayhawks to pull that off twice, even with the home court matchup. That they will the home court advantage that they will have there in Kansas City. So I think U of A can run the house this year in the Big 12 and only win the regular season championship, but the Big 12 championship as well. But if the Buffs do have a chance, or if the Buffs end up somehow making this and not U of A, right? I'm gonna still put U of A here, obviously. Now I put CU here to face Houston. If CU has to face Houston in the second round, obviously the Buffs suffered their worst loss of the year at Houston, but they won't be playing at Houston. They won't be playing a team that will be as angry as Houston was on that Saturday, just over a week ago. So there would be some different circumstances for the Buffaloes, and I think that they could potentially figure out some things in the front court. I mean, they played so much better versus Arizona than they had in almost any single game this year in terms of their energy in the front court and their physicality. And so I think with that breakthrough, they could carry that into a tough game against the Cougars when the Buffs met Houston in the Big 12 tournament last year, even though much different team for Colorado. You know, they played them close. I think this year's Houston team, even though on other podcasts, I talked about how the defensive culture may not allow for bigger blowouts. They obviously have more, they have the potential for bigger offensive outbursts with Kingston Flemings and how the backcourt scores the ball. While Jerron Roberts, even though he's more sound, and I appreciate him and the depth that Houston had last year, they weren't as much like going for huge showings. Like that, but the Houston, they can go for big games, and I think obviously I think that they will be too much for the Buffs to handle, but Colorado, I think they can match up a little bit better than they did in that first meeting against the Cougars, where they lost by 40 points, gave up 102 at the Fertitta Center. Yeah, I mean, it'll just be very tough, but you know, somehow assuming they win that one and then have to take on U of A in the championship. I mean, the Buffs showed that they can play with them. They may, at that point, you'd have to guess that they'd have Sebastian Rancic, which could be a huge advantage, not only to have a sophomore forward back that can score the ball and rebound it a little bit as well, and add that front court depth that the Buffs lacked when Bang got that guy in the foul trouble on Saturday. He would potentially have some fresh legs. where even the Wildcats would be playing their third game in in 3 days at that point. So that could be the Buffs' only advantage, I think. Not really much to break down. Like, there wasn't anything I saw on Saturday that I thought the Buffs could exploit, even though they were able to build that lead and find some momentum. Like, I think the best chance the Buffs had at the Wildcats would be the first one, just because they could do something unlikely and just be a team that Arizona hasn't seen. But I think in a second matchup, the Wildcats would know what to do, and showing that they can handle showing how they handled them in the second half and adjusted and whatnot, I think they could do the same given that Buffs. If the Buffs somehow made it to all the way to the Big 12 championship and were able to play the Wildcats for the fifth game in 5 days. But, if CU wins that, then they're on the dance and everyone's all happy. So, yeah, that's my breakdown of the Big 12 tournament. Yeah, I think Arizona will win that whole thing anyways, and will meet Kansas in the championship. That is my actual realistic breakdown. But if the Buffs were to somehow make it to March Madness for the Big 12 championship, they'd have to win 5 games in 5 days. Their set path already would be Oklahoma State, which I think they can win, TCU, which I think they can win, the number 3 seeded Kansas Jayhawks, and Kansas City, which I think is just even Arizona. I think Kansas is a lock to make the Big 12 championship. No matter what, give them the home court advantage and then give Arizona a run for their money, assuming that Arizona is the team that makes it out of the other half of the conference. But then, yeah, even if the Buffs win that, they take on either Houston or another team, and then likely take on Arizona, Iowa State, or Texas Tech. So, I mean, just an absolute gauntlet for anybody for any of these 16 teams hoping to make some noise. But for the Buffs, going for that impossible chance of March Madness, man, it'd be something. I'm not even sure necessarily why I wasted the extra time to speak on all that nonsense. But hopefully you guys enjoyed me talking about this, and there was a little bit of insight. I don't think there was anything too specific, but I want to get back in the swing of things of posting regularly on the pod and whatnot. But man, I'm so gosh darn tired, dude. But, like, I finished up the 9 p.m. tip-off coverage at like 5 in the morning, like 5:30 in the morning, I think. And like I tweeted, like I wasn't joking when they put that when I realized that daylight savings and we were jumping ahead an hour. Yeah, that sucked. I'm running on like 2 hours of sleep, but yeah. I'm gonna hit the road tomorrow with Scobo Sports, Liam Howard. I believe I shouted them out at the beginning of this. If not, go follow Scobo Sports and Liam the Ghost Howard. He was at the Big 12 tournament last year, so you guys probably saw some of my coverage with him and Scobo Sports. So support them as well on my behalf. And yeah, I'm excited to be in Kansas City after a long drive, and yeah, hopefully, Spot was able to show you guys some things, or at least, spark up some thoughts or enlighten you. But that's another episode of In the Heyday, breaking down the Big 12 tournament. My name is Oliver Hayes. I appreciate you guys for watching, and I will catch you guys next time.